Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. Hello, everyone. It's March 26, 2024, a Tuesday, and rumors broke this morning of a possible major change with the USC men's basketball program, and that's why we're having an emergency podcast. Chase and Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Chase, I'm good. Just really interesting day, and we'll break it all down for you.
Yes. So the rumor is, I'm sure everyone's heard by now, that Andy Enfield will be accepting the job as the head coach for the SMU Mustangs. The rumor is that it's going to be a large contract worth up to a total of $30 million. That sounds like it could be a six-year deal for Andy Enfield. He had 4 years left on his USC contract at about $16 million. So this is a nice little pump for him from that. SMU is moving into the ACC, even though they're not going to be getting a revenue share. This is a very strange situation as far as what SMU is doing, because it's not even clear that the ACC will exist by the time that SMU is entitled to revenue share, but they do want to be prepared. There's a lot of money circulating around that school. It's obviously in a very nice area of Dallas. It's always had a lot of money associated with it, which caused its problems in the 80s. It got itself a death penalty, and they ended up missing 2 years of football before bringing the program back. And it's, school's never quite been the same. They did have Larry Brown as the head coach there about 8 years ago. Brown did a very nice job, but then left very quickly, as he tends to do. And the basketball program, they're kind of returned to mediocrity. This is a major investment. I know that they've been looking for other big name coaches. They've been looking for a splash hire. The coach that Lanier was the coach that they had, and he had actually done a pretty decent job of improving SMU's record over a couple of years. So, you know, this is a lot of big stuff going on with them, and this is a big move. What are your thoughts, Nick?
Really, really surprising. And think about it more, it really shouldn't be. Just given SMU's status is kind of a sleeping giant with, you know, them being in Dallas, them having big money boosters, and their move to the ACC. It makes sense that they would go big game hunting. Timing wise, a $30 million figure is pretty staggering. I mean, it's a lot of money. If it's a 5-year deal, that puts them at six-year deal puts them at 5 a year. Either way, it's a raise from his existing deal at USC and more years. So, you know, great financial security for him and his family. And I guess my initial reaction was just super stoked for the Enfields with this opportunity.
Yeah, great for them. And look, obviously, just whatever, you know, has been going on this season, the standing of the program when Andy took over was very low. About as low as you can get when you have Kevin O'Neill running your program from Coronado Island. It's kind of basically a joke, and Andy brought it back very steadily. He didn't pull a lot of gimmicks. I know there were maybe some criticism about bringing in Eric Mobley later on to be a coach there, but I think it made sense for a lot of reasons, and it worked out very well. He steadily built a program and turned USC into a steady winner. And then over a 3-year period, essentially won 14 or 15 games in conference every year, which is not something SC had ever really done before. So dating back to maybe, you know, the era of Bob Boyd. So this is it's a really impressive run that he took the team through. And he definitely deserves to be congratulated for that. I'll stick with the praise for a second. I'll talk about some of the criticism in a moment too, but anything you want to add on to that, Nick?
I think you mostly hit on it. We've had a lot of pros. I mean, you think about all the pros over Enfield's tenure: McLaughlin, Melton, Mettu, both Mobley brothers, Onyeka Okongwu, Kevin Porter, right? Drew Peterson has even played some NBA games.
And now Isaiah Collier.
Yep, Isaiah Collier, right? He'll be the next in line here. So yeah, I mean, it's and Kevin O'Neill, I guess he had Nikola Vucevic, but just the level of sustained success over the better part, I guess he's been here over a decade now, right? Which
This
is
is his
crazy.
11th, yeah, this was his 11th season.
Yeah, so the 11 years went by super quickly, but every good run, I guess, comes to a close. And I think there's a really good case here that this is best for both USC and for coach.
It'll definitely be a new opportunity for Coach Infield. I do think it's a very intriguing opportunity. Gosh, I mean, there is so much basketball talent in Texas. Not to say that there's not in California. Yes, obviously there is in California, but in California, you kind of get presented with a lot of pressure to recruit like one and done type talent, guys that are everyone's trying to make it to the NBA. There's lots and lots of kind of basketball mills around, and these high profile programs like Sierra Canyon, where all the NBA players are sending their kids. Texas is just throughout the state, there's just a lot of talent there that you can mine. I mean, it sustains a lot of really good programs. And if you can get the right recruiters in there to like harness that talent, you are going to be a winner, absolutely for sure. And I think Andy can do that. I think, the criticism of Andy has been that he probably did not schedule tough enough, and that some of his winning record is a little bit inflated somewhat because of the scheduling. He only finished in the top 40 of KenPom one time in his 11 seasons. Now, after those first two really tough seasons, almost every year he's finishing between 45 and 55 in KenPom almost every year. There are a couple outliers, 2019 and then this season. And then there's the 2021 season when we made a run to the Elite Eight, and we're arguably like the third best team in the country that year with Evan Mobley. So we finished sixth in KenPom that year. But in general, Andy was kind of fielding teams that were more like top 55, top 50 KenPom teams. And I think he did a tremendous job of overall raising the program. Kevin O'Neill's second to last, his last full season before the season he got fired, we were down to ranked number 220 in KenPom, and we were 1-17 in the Pac-12. I mean, just absolutely dead in the water. And Andy really brought us back and gave us sustainability. I think to take it to the next level, where you're like a perennial top 30 program, if SC can get there, this is where you need to make that absolutely critical hire of a guy that can pull that off.
I think that's right. And, not to get super in the weeds detail wise here, but we've talked about that 2026 recruiting class in California. Kentucky really showed this year that you can't strictly win with one and dones only. But man, I mean, it sure would be nice to have one or two of these elite kids to, pair with some transfers or some upperclassmen. Just again, there are five top 10 kids from the state of California in the 2026 rankings, and four of those five are ranked in the top five. So, whoever the new coach is, he's going to have access to some elite talent here. If he builds the relationships and has some NIL to go with it.
Okay, so I think we'll have more of an opportunity to discuss. First of all, this is not nothing is official yet, so we're doing this broadcast
Yeah.
because we want to get out there. So, things always change. There could be a fall apart in the last second. So I don't want to make it seem like this is a fait accompli. It is not. we're just anticipating that all the information we have, and I've gotten some very good information, that it's all consistent and that it's basically it's going to happen. Already now there's discussions of what happens next with the program, and there's some concern online about the recruiting class falling apart. Yes, I mean, in all likelihood, the recruiting class is going to probably fall apart if the head coach leaves and takes his assistants. That's just how things work. The other side of that is, as Nick just discussed, recruiting classes are not as, when it comes to high school recruiting, it's not nearly as important as it used to be. I'm sorry, sadly, maybe, but these days you build your program partially from high school recruiting and then partially from the transfer portal. And I think Trent Perry, as the kind of headline of the recruiting class, is an excellent prospect. I think a legitimate top 30 prospect. I know Bill Simmons, who's new to Los Angeles, absolutely loves Trent Perry. He's the state player of the year. It's not entirely clear to me that he would have been ready to be a starter right out of the gate, no matter what. And the other two guys in the recruiting class, I think, really seemed like role players, and I'm not exactly sure where they would fit with it if you're completely like changing the personnel of the program and making it anew. And by the way, this was happening anyway because Andy had already, we were already looking to complete, like, just do a control delete, reset on the program. I know for a fact that Kobe Johnson, in discussions with the coaching staff, was not dissuaded from seeking other opportunities in the portal, not because they don't think that Kobe is a huge talent, but because they're like realized, hey, we're starting all anew. And Kobe did have other opportunities, including looking at the draft and other schools that probably want to pay him a lot of money in NIL, whereas SC is kind of starting over. And that was going to be with Andy. So we were going to see a complete turnover in personnel anyway. So this might be, the least painful way to go about it, if that makes sense, Nick.
I think it makes complete sense. Yeah, Perry is the guy I think you want to try to keep if you can, but I have no idea if that's going to happen. He's going to have plenty of good opportunities if he does get out of his LOI here. But like you said, like with the transfer portal in place, you can rebuild to competence really, really quickly. It's going to require a commitment on USC's part and whoever the new coach's part to raise the funds and make that happen. But anytime there's a new coach, you can pitch the vision of excitement, right? You kind of have a blank slate, and there are lots of different things you can sell with that.
So, you want to maybe we should discuss a little bit of the rumored candidate list, and we can give our thoughts on this. So, I think this really needs to be divided up into like two different broad categories of whether or not some of these kind of the elite coaches and whether or not they're accessible, and the less elite coaches. Now, I mean, there are a lot of big time openings, right? And one of the concerns about like if there was going to be a move from Andy after the season was that we would be competing with all these other big openings. Louisville, which is one of the great programs, in fact, I mean, as recently as 5 years ago, the number one revenue generating program in college basketball, even more than Kentucky or Duke or North Carolina, Louisville, this job has been open for a while. They have not filled it. The latest rumors as of recently is even Richard Pitino from New Mexico. Is that right, Nick? I mean, am I missing on that?
He's one of the names for sure.
Which gives you a sense of how other candidates for these jobs have just kind of fizzled, and that includes guys like Scott Drew at Baylor. Ohio State opened up. There was all kinds of rumors. I mean, there's a lot of Midwest, really strong Midwest programs. Ohio State's been known to take from schools like Butler. Thad Mata is the coach at Butler now. Sean Miller was previously a coach at Butler, I think, way back in the day, right? Is that right, or was he not ever a coach at Butler? Maybe not. No, he
I'm
was.
not
He was
sure.
only at Xavier and then back to Xavier. But look, it's in Cincinnati. It's an hour and a half drive from Columbus. Ohio State's a much bigger program and a much wealthier conference. And Ohio State ended up going the route of just promoting the interim coach, which I think shocked a lot of people. That he did very well. And I don't know if they didn't want to pay like a buyout with Sean Miller, but Sean Miller had been rumored to be connected to that job opening, and it didn't happen. There are coaches who've been constantly rumored to be looking to move. Now, you never know if this is a ploy by their agents to get them a bigger contract. And a perfect example of these, Jerome Tang at Kansas State, his name is being linked to a lot of these job openings, but he's never actually moved to take any of them. So you got to wonder, is this a ploy to get more money? The big one who's out there that you're going to hear the name a lot talked about a lot is Eric Musselman at Arkansas, who was a former NBA coach, and he coached in Nevada, so he has connection. He coached the Warriors. He has connections to the West Coast. He also has a bit of a salty reputation. So, this is not the friendliest guy in the world. And he's, basically built programs through transfers, really, for the most part, both at Nevada and at Arkansas. So, I don't know. Any thoughts on that, Nick?
I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's hard to know whether these guys want to move, just given all the agent chatter out there. But Musselman's name has been out there for months. It's been rumored that he is interested in coming to the West Coast. He was even like briefly linked with ASU when it looked like Hurley might jump to DePaul. So yeah, you never really know how these dominoes will fall, but I think that's certainly going to be the hot name early on here, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and the only big opening that's gotten a big hire so far is Michigan, and then getting Dusty May. And that was a situation where he actually had to reconsider, right? I mean, do you know the story with Dusty May doing reconsidering on that job?
Yeah, well, I know that Louisville thought they had him and were setting up a press conference to announce him as the coach. And then a few hours later, he was announced in Michigan. So these things can change on a whim. I think Louisville fans are pretty nervous just given how long that opening has been open. So we'll see what happens there. But so I kind of agree with the idea that sometimes you have these openings and they have inflated opinions of the quality of their job, and maybe there's some of that going on with Louisville. But at the same time, you look across college basketball outside of Louisville, is there another major job right now that USC is competing against? I don't know there is.
No, I don't think there is, not this moment. And we should say too, by the way, there were two interesting job fill former Pac-12 schools, Stanford getting Kyle Smith. I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable hire. We talked about that on the last podcast, where if you're looking at SC, okay, maybe SC would have looked at Kyle Smith. I mean, I think SC definitely would have looked at Kyle Smith if this move by infills had been made a week prior, or if Washington State had made it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, and Kyle Smith wasn't quite ready to move along. And then you have Sprinkle going to Washington. So all of that is interesting. I mean, I actually think, frankly, I think it's a possibility that SC might still look at Kyle Smith.
Yeah, there's no
He,
doubt. I was gonna say, like, he absolutely could still be in play. Chris Beard did it, like, 5 or so years ago, where he took the job at UNLV and then was on a plane to Texas Tech a few days later.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the other names that are going to be out there. So that almost that's I should say this, you know, I said we're going to put this in two categories. You're going to the other kind, you're going to hear names like Chris Capco, who is an assistant current assistant coach at USC, who by you know everyone seems to like. I think he's well liked at USC. The problem is he's never been a head coach of college basketball before. He's basically worked for Andy and Phil for the past decade. And then Jason Hart, you're going to hear, who you know worked at SC, you know, since Andy started until he left to take the job for the G League Ignite, and frankly didn't do very well. They've performed very poorly, and now they're disbanding their program. You're going to hear a lot of you know push for that locally. I do not think that those are you know grown-up choices at this point. I think those are coaches that need to prove themselves at other locations before they get a job at the level of USC. So I would say, to me, the floor on the hire should be somebody like Kyle Smith. That's where I'm coming from. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's right, and that's not to disrespect Capco or Hart. I think you know both of them can bring a lot to a program, no doubt about it. But you know, you'd feel better about them as head coaches if they you know proved it at the mid-major level first.
Yeah, and look, I think there's just an aspect of this is how you work your way up the chain. You first you get to that mid-major level, unless you're at a program where the program is super elite and you're the number one guy. Now, if Andy was retiring after having, you know, made the Final Four in 3 of the past 7 years, and now his number one guy, Capco, wants to become the head coach, I think that's a completely different situation. But you know, we're basically a kind of a marginal NCAA team, you know, kind of working our way in from the bubble most years, and sometimes not making it into the tournament when we've had some bad years. So I don't think he's, unfortunately, just the level of the program is not such that it would be appropriate to be looking at him, even though that's what Ohio State did essentially by taking Holtzman's assistant coaches, that making him the permanent head coach. I think that's probably not going to work, is my guess. Conversely, a guy like Kyle Smith, you know, has demonstrated that he can just slowly improve. And when he did it, I'm very, very impressed what he did at Washington State. That is not an easy place to coach at all. And he's had to have a really amazing eye for talent to go and to succeed at a place like that. So, you know, I think you at least need to look at like that level of coach, in my opinion. And then you start looking at, well, let me ask you that, Nick, do you have any other names that are, before we get to the big national names, do you have any other names that are like kind of more kind of potential local guys or mid-major level guys that you think we should take a look at?
Bryce Drew probably warrants some consideration at Grand Canyon. He brother of Scott Drew, he was you know won a national title at Baylor, but Grand Canyon was very, very good this year. He's got a really good situation with NIL and fan support, so it is a really high quality mid-major job. But just really impressive that you're taking out Randy Bennett at St. Mary's. You know, Randy Bennett might be another name. Not really a sexy hire, but you know, it's got a really high floor. Just don't know how that works in LA, so don't think that's the move I'd make, but it'd be a very professional hire, I think.
What do you think about Nico
Gosh,
Medved?
I like him. He runs really good sets at Colorado State, and he's done it over multiple years, which I do like. Again, like not a really like sexy hire, but a guy that I
Yeah.
think would work,
I think
right? So,
he's a coach's coach, but not a sexy hire at all. You know, kind of just
yeah.
a, you know, it's like if you can't hit on other guys, you got to take a look at a guy like that, I think.
Right. And I think like Leon Rice probably falls in that same category at Boise State, right? He's
Yeah.
made a bunch of tournaments up there at Boise, but hasn't broken through in the tournament, so to speak. You know, Brian Dutcher's a name at San Diego State.
No, I think he did just sign a big extension though with
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean that because that had been brought up for a while. I think Dutcher is gonna he's coming on 64 years old, which is not too old, but the fact that he's also got this like large buyout, I believe, that's attached to his extension. I mean, look, he's had tremendous success. You cannot argue with the success that he's had, but I think as a practical matter, I think it might just be a little difficult to, they have a tremendous support for that program down San
Yes.
Diego.
Yep, absolutely. And look, I think a lot of the options that we're talking about will be dictated by, the big piece of the puzzle that we don't really know yet, which is, did SMU pay USC any money to buy out Andy Enfield? Because we've talked about it on this show before. His remaining contract was 4 years, $16 million, and we've mostly talked about it in the context of, yeah, it'd be really hard to fire him with that buyout and all that money you would owe him. But because SMU's hiring, the question kind of gets turned on its head here. Like, did they pay USC $16 million to buy him out of that contract? I'd be surprised if if they paid them the full 16, given that they're already paying him, close to $30 million for his new deal that would total 46 million. Which is it's a heck of a lot of money. But you never really know. So I'm really curious to see how that all shakes out too.
Yep. Okay, let's talk about some bigger national names. We already mentioned Eric Musselman. I mean, I think that's going to be the name you're going to hear first. And if that's going to get done, I think it's going to have to get done quickly, or else it's not going to get done. So you'll know if it's happening or not. Jerome Tang at Kansas State. I don't. We. I think I'm now repeating myself, but I don't know if he's really trying to get out of that job and trying to get to another job. But he is a name that keeps showing up on these lists. Very well respected. Do you want to talk a little bit about Tang?
Yeah, longtime assistant coach under Scott Drew. So he was part of that national championship Baylor team. Didn't have a great year this year. They were 71st in KenPom, but they had to replace a lot off last year's team with Keontae Johnson. And who am I missing? Who else was on that team? Oh, Marquise Noel, that guard. He was really dynamic for them in the tournament as a passer and scorer. So we'll see. I mean, I think it'd be a very professional hire, but hard to really know. There's no West Coast tie with him either. So, you don't really know if he's really trying to get out or just using it as a ploy to get Kansas State to give him more NIL money.
Okay, so Sean Miller, I know one of your favorites. He is the buyout on Sean Miller. I know there he got an extension in the fall. I'm not exactly sure what the buyout is. I think his contract runs through 2029. So he's like signed up, for 6 years or 5 more years. But I think he would kill it at USC. We've talked about this before. What are your thoughts there?
Great coach, right? I mean, went to several Elite Eights at Arizona, had several teams that were top five in KenPom at the end of the year. He's had good, really good defenses and good offenses to go with it. Can recruit at a super high level, especially if you equip him with NIL. So I think the sky's the limit with him.
Yeah, so just, I mean, just going over, some of the guys that he's recruited over the years, even after you get past the kind of guys that he took from USC when he showed up, he recruited on his own, Nick Johnson, Brandon Ashley, Caleb Tarzewski, Grant York, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson out of Pennsylvania. Aaron Gordon, Stanley Johnson. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, even to the end where he was recruited. At the very end, brings in Ben Matherin, who's, tearing it up in the NBA, to Bellis, Dalen Terry, Christian Koloko. So, I mean, he has at Arizona just recruited. I mean, he recruited so many really, really, really good basketball players. I think at SC he would just do tremendously. But again, we don't know if he's truly available or not, and how what kind of money that would cost. Brad Underwood at Illinois, we've seen him, his name surface a few times on these lists. I don't know what his situation is as far as buyout goes. He is obviously one of the very highly regarded coaches in all of basketball.
Yeah, and his team's still alive in the tournament. So if you wanted to hire Brad, that would take a little bit longer than some of these other candidates. But yeah, really, really high level coach. He's had sustained success at Illinois, and Illinois is a good job, but you can definitely screw it up too. They had some rough years there under like John Gross. He was there for, let's see, for 5 years. Never had a top 35 KenPom team while he was there. Bruce Weber had a lot of success there. More early on in his tenure, like in his second year, they won 37 games, went to the championship game with D Brown and those guys. But yeah, I mean, Brad's built it up to a sustained level where they're a consistent winner.
So let me we'll talk a couple other names here. One that I'm sure you're interested in because of the potential buyout money, and that's Mick Cronin. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think you know what you're getting with Mick, right? You're getting a really hard-nosed culture. You are getting a guy who knows LA. He has contacts in LA. Might not even have to move, right? He's made the Final Four. I think he's made another Elite Eight at UCLA. Is that right? Maybe it was a Sweet 16, but it
Yeah, I
was
think it
that
was
team
Sweet
with.
16. Yeah.
Yeah, it was that team where like Edin Bono was hurt, right? So they probably should have gone further than Strother hit that like 30-footer through
Right.
Gonzaga
Right. Well,
against
they made the
them.
Sweet.
But
They also made the Sweet 16 right when Caleb Love went crazy on them, right?
yeah, so he's had like, one of those teams was 11 in KenPom, the other was 3. So those were two really, really good teams that he built. So no, I think Mick is a very safe hire and really safe bet to win. And he's unhappy, I think, with their NIL situation, and that's part of the reason the roster got so bad. So the buyout is what you'd have to overcome. But again, like if SMU is paying you buyout money, and we don't know that to be the case, but if they are, I think options like that become possible.
One other name that you had floated to me earlier, which I thought was intriguing, is the kind of coach in waiting in Houston, Kelvin Sampson's Sampson's son. Do you want to talk about a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. Kellen Sampson played for Kelvin at Oklahoma, longtime assistant on the Houston staff, named coach in waiting a few years ago. I think with him is, you're betting on trying to get a younger version of Kelvin Sampson. And, he hasn't been around as long as Kelvin, but, if you're betting on any person to bring the Samson DNA quite literally to your program, it's Kellen Sampson. So kind of I don't think like he's gonna be the guy at USC, but just another name to file away here.
Okay. I think we might even try, if you're available, to come back and do more podcasting in the evening when we get more information and Romer's available to join us. Anything else you want to hit on before we're done?
Just one more name, Chase. John Calipari. What do you think?
Oh
Is it
gosh, how can
possible?
we? Okay, well, and how can we have done this podcast and forget about this? Okay. This actually, if you think about it, it actually makes some sense, right? Because the Kentucky people are absolutely dying to get rid of Calipari. The rumor is that the buyout is $33 million. However, that goes away if you can reach a deal with some other school to kind of take on Calipari. Obviously, Kentucky's going to have to pay some of that. SC is not going to pay Calipari $33 million for like 3 years. But it could be a contract where, let's say, $30 million for 5 years, and Kentucky pays in addition, pays some extra money to Calipari on the side, something like that. Now, why, this is Calipari is now kind of the point of legend, almost like a caricature of himself. has struggled the last several years, but has recruited, look, I mean, if you look at the NBA, two schools have recruited by far way more NBA current NBA players than anybody else. One is Duke, and number one is Calipari recruiting from Kentucky. So now it's in a way the game has kind of changed. You don't need these one and dones anymore. But if Calipari kind of just made this subtle adjustment, kind of like got a little bit current with the times and some of the things he's doing. I mean, even his team this year, I know they led that horrible loss to Oakland, but they were really good at moments this season. I think he's just got to build a bit more of a veteran foundation there, but he is able to get elite players like, and if you go take him to Los Angeles, I think you could supercharge that. So I think there is a ton of interesting scenarios if Calipari wanted to do the LA thing. Now, let's take this back a few years. If when UCLA fired Steve Alford, the target was Calipari, and in fact, the two biggest boosters for the program thought they had a deal done for Calipari. And basically Calipari double-crossed them. The offer was not really much of a raise from what he was making in Kentucky. That was one of the issues. And this is back before Calipari had his struggle. So this is when he's at kind of the height of his power. The offer from UCLA was really kind of the same amount of money. And then, of course, if you just cost a living, you would have been he'd have to take a pay cut. But I think the thinking was Los Angeles, you're going to be able to do amazing things there. But at the end of the day, Calipari just took them for a ride and used this to get a huge extension, which he currently has this crazy contract. He then proceeded to tell his good buddy, Rick Barnes, who was then at Tennessee, hey, you should go to tell UCLA you're interested in taking the job there. And Rick Barnes did the exact same thing, took UCLA for a ride and got himself a big extension. And he was pretty notorious at the time. UCLA fans were apoplectic. And the two boosters that had tried to put the deal together were just livid. And they had kind of a falling out with the administration because the administration continued to offer like their money to more and more coaches when those guys were like, no, this money was for Calipari only. So that became an issue. Eventually, they settled on the guy who'd stuck around and like waited for UCLA to try to make out with all the other girls. And that was Mick Cronin. He stuck around. And I think at the end of the day, they turned out to get a pretty decent coach by just kind of sheer luck. I think the Calipari thing may have gone either way. Maybe it would have been great at UCLA, but it really worked out with Cronin. So all that to say, if you're going to go down this road with Calipari, you just got to be careful because you don't want him to screw you. Now, his leverage is nowhere near where it was before. Where before, Kentucky was absolutely terrified of losing him. Now, Kentucky would be, can't wait to get rid of him.
Right. And you're not at the point where like you could actually, if you're USC and you wanted to go down this road, like he's not playing in the tournament, right? So you could like approach him with an offer, put a deal together, give him 24 to 48 hours to say no. And then if he says no, just move on to Musselman or whoever your other candidate is, right? Like it's not like Calipari is, widely considered a top two coach in the sport, and any other candidate would be a massive step down from them to the point where you have to wait on Calipari. That's not the case anymore, like you mentioned, and that kind of ties in with the leverage point you were making here.
Okay. We will be back podcasting again sometime very, very soon. But thanks for listening, everyone, to this emergency podcast on the afternoon of Tuesday, March 26th. Thanks.